William Grider is a reporter who's worked for over 35 years for newspapers, magazines, and television. For 20 years, he's challenged mainstream thinking on economics. We have the opportunity today to ask William Grider about the bailout plans that have been proposed, a Bush-Paulson bailout plan proposed by the Bush administration and particularly its appointees to lead the financial institutions that the United States government involves in its day-to-day operations, the Department of the Treasury, particularly the SEC, very minimally, at least in this past presidential administration, and the Department of the Treasury. William Grider was national affairs editor at Rolling Stone magazine. He investigated there the defense establishment. He was at the Washington Post and broke the story of how David Stockman, then Ronald Reagan's budget director, grew disillusioned with supply-side economics and the budget deficits that policy caused. That policy still burdens the American economy, William Grider says. His most recent book is The Soul of Capitalism, Opening Paths to a Moral Economy, where he untangles the systemic mysteries of American capitalism, detailing destructive collisions with society and demonstrating how people can achieve decisive influence to reform the system structure and operating values. Welcome to the program, William Grider.
Thanks.
William Grider, in the last couple of weeks, you've written a number of articles for The Nation magazine, taking a look at what's been going on with the proposed bailout, with the financial meltdown itself. And most recently, you say, along with the bailout, how about an apology? You present, as you say, the arresting image of Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson genuflecting before House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, sending gasps and titters through the corridors of power in Washington. Strong leaders, you wrote, do not bow before rivals, especially a woman. That really struck you as quite ironic, something I missed. What else do you think that symbolizes?
Well, it's this happened at the White House on Thursday when Bush, trying to pretend he's still president, called all of the both party leaders together, and they had to dust up there over the bailout. But afterwards, Paulson literally pleaded with Pelosi, don't run out on me. You promised to support this package, $700 billion, et cetera, and I need you. And he bows down. He sort of goes down on his knees before her. A gesture that an amusing gesture, but it actually reminded me that what's missing from this financial crisis and all of the drama around it is any hint of contrition from the people who made it happen, and that starts with people like Paulson, who was CEO at Goldman Sachs before he became Treasury Secretary, and of course Bush, and of course Alan Greenspan and the Federal Reserve, and I can go on and on, but I want to emphasize for your listeners, the Democrats are not, they claim a certain innocence, but they're not. They were architects of this thing too, including their Wall Street economic advisors, it's not all I want, actually. I want a lot more. But what I want, for starters, is somebody in authority to say to the American people, I'm sorry. I'm sorry this happened. I regret the errors I made. And I won't demand at this moment of crisis a full confession, but I'm not being facetious about this. This country has been deeply wounded. And getting over the injuries in our financial system and the private finances of millions of American families is going to be very difficult and painful. Somewhere soon, we need to begin a reckoning in which both political parties, the Federal Reserve, the White House, the Congress, all of the leading political institutions are compelled to come forward and admit their errors, because otherwise, this is a fiendishly one-sided deal where taxpayers are told to hand over their money, $700 billion, to the banking system that created this disaster, and basically ask no questions. That's outrageous. And people are all over the country are outraged, and rightly so.
People certainly are outraged, have demonstrated in the street. I've heard numbers of calls to Congress running 100-1 against bailing out Wall Street. This is certainly a situation in which I wonder if for the American public, any apology, no matter how sincere, from no matter how many Wall Street tycoons could possibly matter compared to the $700 billion. I've heard estimates of around $4,000 per person per year for a bailout like this. And there may well be more to come, and perhaps before Election Day and over the course of the next month or more.
Yeah, I'm. Believe me, I don't put any of that aside. I know some of what's coming, and it's going to be very rough. What I'm suggesting is that as a country overall, we have seen absolute destruction of trust, not just in the Bush White House and not just in the Treasury Department, but in the Congress as a whole, both parties, and then we go to the financial system and those institutions, which have enormous power, governing power, really, over America's lives, are in utter disrepute, not to mention failure. We are going to need a process in which people at large, not just the power brokers and the lobbyists, but Americans in general, are spoken to with some honesty and clarity by all of these different elements of governing elites. I would throw in the media as well, because they have been very much partners in the delusions of the last 20 years and leading cheers for the strong men who are our governors.
Ed William Greider, just on that point, to interrupt you, I apologize, but as a reporter for 35 years yourself, tell us exactly what you mean. Do you mean the working reporters on the street? Do you mean their editors? Do you mean the publishers? Or do you mean the investors in the newspaper industry who drove it into 20% profits and now are, of course, forcing the concomitant downsizing of the real reporters who do the work?
All of those and some others. I mean, the corporate ownership and the concentration of media ownership is a fundamental element in the fact that the leading newspapers have been in a really very comfortable alliance with the best and the brightest who run things. And that's especially true in economics and finance. Now, having said that, I need to add quickly, there are in the mainstream media and including the biggest and most prestigious newspapers, some terrific reporters who, for whatever reason, have the independence of thought and the guts to peel open stories that most of the herd either doesn't understand or willfully ignores. So, you know, generalizations are dangerous and hurtful to people who don't deserve to be disparaged. But it is still true that, on the whole, the best, most prestigious, and most influential newspapers have been in alliance with these ideas that have failed. And you can, I mean, I could,
you know,
I
for
could
example,
ask
the,
I could
the free ask market
a, yeah the free market and the financial the new financial architecture that was supposedly removing risk and all of the excesses of Wall Street. I mean, if to take my plea for a little bit of contrition, I would like to see a little contrition from the major media. And I mean columnists, editorial writers, whoever, saying, you know what, we got this wrong for a lot of years, and we deliberately ignored critics who were telling us that things were off the rails. I immodestly include myself among those, but it's not personal with me. I mean, the media has broken down, as a as a reliable communications venue for the public because of that very marriage they made with the elite opinion on the powerful. I mean, you don't take my word for it. You can go anywhere in America and talk to people; they will tell you the same thing. This is what drives me nuts. I've been a reporter for many years, too many, and I've traveled around the country. I've been in all kinds of situations. The American people, on the whole, are pretty smart. They don't have perhaps higher degrees, but they have a sense of experience and knowledge that comes out of their lives, and they figure things out. Not everything, and they don't always get it right, but that's my sense of the people. The media thinks they're drooling idiots, but so do a lot of politicians, and so do the institutions of government, that you can spin them around with a few good phrases and maybe some TV images, and they don't either have the capacity to understand things or want to understand them.
William Grider, when you say the media thinks the American public do not have so much intelligence, would you clarify that, put a little finer point on that phrase, the media? Do you mean reporters? Do you mean television reporters, newspaper reporters, or TV producers? Or
all of them. Again, with my caveat that there are brilliant reporters and brave reporters functioning in all of those venues.
So that might explain.
But look, I know this sounds frothy and a little over the top, but when I say they have a condescending view of the public, it's not because they told me that, although some have personally. But you can read their stories and what those stories explain and what they don't explain, and infer that they must have a pretty low opinion of what average reader can grasp. They dumb down things much the way politicians do, and then later lament the fact that the people don't seem to understand this or that, and so forth and so on.
And not only that, but I wonder if reporters lament the fact that when Americans are polled, one of the most reviled, mistrusted, and hated professions, I'm sorry to say, is journalism.
I know. Well, look, here's a parallel example that should be more obvious to people than my discussion of finance and economics. Go back and think about the coverage of 9/11 and the frenzy that occurred after that, and real pain and loss felt by American people, and how that was engineered into a crusade against Iraq. And it happened in a matter of months. And then, of course, we learned subsequently that, well, Bush was already planning to go to war against Iraq, but 9/11 gave him a very convenient reason to claim that this is our enemy. And then go back and remember how the media covered that. Again, with a few honorable, brave exceptions, they went along with the song. In fact, they pumped it up. And it's true, in the last 2-3 years, the media has gotten a bit more vigilant. How could they not? The public was overwhelmingly, 60% or so, against this war, and so the media is not completely opaque. They recognize that they should attend more seriously to the critics. But you see what I'm driving at. I mean, that's almost a sociological reality, and we're seeing it again in this bailout. There are some tough stories being written, partly because the public is so inflamed instantly, almost.
One type of story that I was glad to see from a comparatively new but serious news organization, the Interpress Service news agency, a report entitled "Bailout for Who?" Reported yesterday that a 2007 report by the Government Accountability Office found in 2004 just 36% of workers had any savings at all in a retirement account. Now, this, I'm going to quote from this in just a moment, but I want to point out this is begging the question, for whom is this bailout and who is it really affecting? And it might behoove all of us, but particularly the Congress and Secretary Paulson and those who would bail out Wall Street banks to consider economic inequality and how starkly it's grown in the recent decade. This report, to continue, by Adrian Appel for Interpress Service yesterday, says most U.S. citizens will depend on Social Security in retirement, the government program that provides 30 to 40% of what was earned in their lifetimes. The article continues to point out only 11% of subprime loans went to first-time buyers of homes last year.
That's right.
The vast majorities were refinancing,
yes,
that caused borrowers to owe more in their homes under the guise that they were saving money.
It was a racket. There's no other word for it. They went into neighborhoods where working people, many of some of them retired, had owned their homes for some years, and the value of their homes had risen, so they had equity savings in the value of their home, and they needed repairs, maybe put on a new roof or fix the plumbing. These are not frivolous things, right? And so the salesman said, "We can help you. We'll get your money. We'll get some of that capital out of your house, and then you can do your repairs." And it was in that process that they got gulled into mortgages which were designed to fail. I mean, they were just going to blow up on these people because they didn't have the income levels to sustain them when rates started rising later on. I mean, that people should go to jail for this. But the more fundamental principle, which I've been shouting about for some months, is this is usury. This is the exploitation of poor people, weak people, by the rich and powerful. That's what it boils down to. And that's a moral commandment that exists in the three great religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam. It's ancient. Any society that values it common decency cannot abide usury for long, because what it does is it literally, the powerful get to roll over the poor and take their property. That's what we're watching right now.
William Grider, I wonder if the poor will tolerate this, or if the poor simply have no choice but to tolerate it, given the power dynamics that exist right now in the United States. But it's interesting to watch this particular drama, and I'm curious to hear your reflections about this.
Where
such public sentiment is running so strongly against any bailout,
yes,
and even the most sober economists I've read and talked with, who actually have worked for years writing about the plight of the poor and against greed and excess on Wall Street, even those economists believe there needs to be some kind of multi-billion dollar bailout, maybe not $700 billion, not right away and not without conditions, but some kind of bailout in order to get credit markets moving again, so that ultimately at the bottom of the economic food chain, regular people, the majority of people, can do common things like take out that home loan to fix their leaking roof.
Yeah. Well, let me end on this point. You talked about the people. We have before us a powerful lesson about who has power in this country and who doesn't. And we've been through it. You know how I describe that. And I think for many years, most Americans, not only the poor, but people through, I would say, the most of the heart of the society, regardless of their incomes, have understood this at least in a vague way, and now it's right in their face. I have believed for some years, writing critically about government and economics and so forth, that we are not we're not going to get out of this until there is a powerful counter response from people at large. And obviously that starts with the people who have been personally injured, and that starts with the poor and the working class and so forth. But this is a broader situation even than that. I want to mention before I get off, I have a book that is going to be published next, right after the first of the year, February, called Come Home America, The Rise and Fall and Redeeming Promise of Our Country. And it goes right at this subject, and right at the, not just the crisis before us, but the deeper problems we are facing as a country. So I just put that little plug in, I don't want to sound completely wishful, but I believe Americans at large, if they get their heads up and take a deep breath, can literally take back power in this country, nonviolently and methodically and all over the place. And that's what my book tries to help people think about.
William Grider, thank you for your hope and optimism, and more importantly, perhaps, for your hard reporting for all these years. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks.
William Grider.
Thanks for having me. See you. Bye.
William Grider reported over 35 years for newspapers, magazines, and television. For 20 years, he's challenged mainstream thinking on economics. Grider was national affairs editor at Rolling Stone magazine, where he investigated the defense establishment. While at the Washington Post, he broke the story of how David Stockman, Ronald Reagan's budget director, grew disillusioned with supply-side economics and the budget deficits that policy caused. One of Grider's books is entitled The Soul of Capitalism, Opening Paths to a Moral Economy. You can find William Grider's reporting in many places, but most recently and frequently in the last couple of weeks at The Nation magazine's website. That's thenation.com.